This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hi, welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Matthew Wai, and I'm a journalist at Financial Standard. Diversification remains key for any investment portfolio in today's climate. Across a volatile market, and investors are constantly looking into different sectors to balance their investments. Many may simply choose bonds against equities, but today we have Eric Murray, Head of Clients at Orbis Investment Management, to speak about a specific stock that has sparked immense interest, not only for investors, but also across the gaming community. Thanks for being with us today, Eric.
Thank you for having me, Matthew. It's exciting.
I remember speaking to you not long ago to discuss about the outlook of 2025. And you brought up a handful of interesting sectors, but the one that caught my eyes was the gaming business, particularly the Japanese gaming technology giant, Nintendo. Your view on its recently launched console was really captivating. Being an avid gamer myself, I am totally biased towards this topic. But do you mind sharing more information on the thought process about Orbis Investments' strategy with Nintendo now that the Switch 2 has officially launched?
Yeah, sure. And I feel like I should provide a similar disclaimer that I too am a big nerd. And yes, I pre-ordered my Nintendo Switch 2. And yes, we've been having lots of fun with it.
Awesome.
So I too am biased. But I heard this lovely line recently. Someone said, I might be biased, but that doesn't mean I'm wrong. And I've been copying it ever since then because it made me chuckle. So I think, you know, if we take a step back, we're contrarian investors. It means we're looking for things that are out of favor. And we're very bottom-up, so we try to look for things that are quite idiosyncratic. And Nintendo kind of checked both those boxes for us, because very idiosyncratic in the sense that the business is largely driven by how its consoles are performing, how the games are performing. And it was quite contrarian in the sense that the stock had underperformed over an extended period of time leading up to our initial investments a few years ago. And kind of the context for that, it really leads into the first investment thesis point that we had, which was that historically it's been a very boom-bust business. So they would have one incredibly successful console generation. The one that we were in previously, the Nintendo Switch, was one of those. So Nintendo sold about 155 million units of the Nintendo Switch, the original one. So hugely successful. Almost anyone listening in with kids, you know, there's a very good chance you have one at home. But prior to that, there was the Wii U, was the prior console generation. And Nintendo sold a whopping 14 million units of that console. Right? So less than one-tenth they sold to the Switch. And prior to that was the Nintendo Wii, the original Wii, which sold really well, more than 100 million units. And so the company's history has really been this kind of boom-bust cycle. And it was rooted in a decision they made to dramatically revise the hardware of the console with every generation. And the core of our investment thesis at the time was that they would break that cycle, shift to a model that's much more evolutionary rather than revolutionary, and that would improve the prospects for the business.
I really love this boom-bust cycle ideology that you guys, you know, sort of discuss about. And looking back when the Switch 2 just launched, Nintendo's share price has rose. And, you know, the console, as you mentioned, it's really hard to get your hands on it. But on the investment aspect, was the thematic all the consideration Orbis had before making the investment decision? What were some other crucial factors?
So there were two other, I think, stools of the investment thesis at the time. But they're both really sort of enabled by a more stable business that uses these evolutionary console cycles. So if thesis point number one was that they would break this cycle, thesis point number two was that the business could become more profitable over time through the rising penetration of digital games rather than physical games, as well as a subscription model. So like PlayStation and like Xbox, the two major competing platforms, Nintendo has an online subscription that's necessary to play games online, as well as some other very cool features. They have more than 100 million subscribers of Nintendo Switch Online already, but with the launch of the Switch 2, we felt there's a good chance that they could expand that over time. The digital products can be quite a bit higher margin as well. So between that and the online subscriptions, there's an opportunity here for the business to shift from a hardware-driven business with hardware margins to a software business with software margins. So that would have been thesis point number two. And then number three was that, you know, Nintendo has historically been quite shy about going all in to monetize their intellectual property. They have incredibly valuable intellectual property. They've been leaning into that a little bit more, but we continue to think that they've got lots of opportunities there for further growth. So an example of that would have been the Mario movie, which is now a few years old. You know, if anyone listening hasn't seen that yet, it was pretty entertaining. It was quite good. There's a huge amount of more opportunity for them to do similar things. That film was very successful. Of course, the recent Minecraft movie has been very successful. So it's sort of, it is, I think, underlining the value of this gaming intellectual property. And so those would have been the three kind of elements of the thesis: breaking the cycle, rising digital penetration, improving margins, and then IP monetization. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I said it was not without risk, right? I think the big risk you face is that the Switch 2, the console generation that we're in now, fails for some reason. And thus far, it's looking quite constructive. But you never know, and so that remains a risk.
I believe you mentioned a little bit about this, but what is the strategy with Nintendo moving forward? Is it all about leveraging those IP, you know, marketing, or is there any other considerations that you guys have in terms of when is the best time to exit or, you know, increase investment?
Yeah, so I think you touched on the right thing, which is to say, I think it's the second and the third leg of the thesis that I discussed that still has quite a lot of room to play out. So I think if you think of those three, point number one, if that's breaking the cycle, I think they've now shown that they've got a very good chance of doing it this time around. So Nintendo has never in its history up until now strung together two successful console launches. But we think this time is different, as dangerous as that can be to say. And so it really is about this now, the second and the third leg, right? And proving that out. So rising digital penetration, growing the Nintendo Switch subscriber base, and then leaning on that IP monetization. I would say as contrarians, you know, a tempting thing to do, which can sometimes be a mistake, is to say, well, you know, the stock has now gone from being incredibly out of favor and quite attractively valued, bearing in mind the risks involved, to being somewhat moderately valued and being maybe a little bit less out of favor than what it was. And so now it's time for us to move on to the next thing that's more out of favor. That is often the temptation. But one thing I think that we've learned and tried to internalize is sometimes with these higher quality businesses like a Nintendo, it can actually pay to hang on a little bit longer and to make sure you see through the second and the third sort of stools of the investment thesis as well.
Staying in the same industry, you know, so with a console launch, I want to know if the launch of a new console necessarily translate into, you know, positive investment returns, because disregarding the boom bust cycle that a Nintendo traditionally exhibit in the past, do you guys look at other like gaming technology companies as well?
So we'll look at almost anything that we think is attractively valued. And, you know, what can sometimes happen is our investment team will follow their nose from one idea to the next. And so it does mean sometimes ideas bubble up within the same industry. This would be the only one directly involved in kind of console gaming that we own in our flagship global equity strategy at the moment. But, you know, I think the industry, as much as this is a problem for Nintendo, it is a problem for the industry, right? The industry is littered with kind of failed console launches. Nintendo would be example number one, but there are many failed video game console companies. And even within the remaining platforms, if you think of PlayStation, the PlayStation 3 performed quite poorly, whereas the 2 and the 4 and the 5 have done quite well. I think the current generation of Xbox consoles have done quite poorly in comparison to the likes of the PlayStation and the available Nintendo consoles at the time. So it's quite a hard thing to get right, I think it turns out. And so I don't think it's necessarily true that a new console should portend, you know, great stock prices necessarily. It all depends on how it lands and how it comes out. The other challenge I think you have with a business like PlayStation is, of course, it's a part of Sony. And so there's many other moving pieces in that overall business, whereas Nintendo is quite a pure play based on its console model and its business model.
Absolutely. You know, moving across the other industries as well. So have you observed any similar trends to Nintendo's, you know, the cycle that you mentioned, the boom bust cycle that you mentioned earlier? Or do you think this is unique only to the gaming industry?
That's a tough question. I think there's some similarities. If you just observe how different companies tend to be valued by the stock market, I think it's fair to say that more consistent, more predictable streams of revenue and earnings tend to be valued more highly than those that are less predictable, right? Which makes some sense, right? If I told you could have a stream of earnings that's $10 a year, year in, year out for the next 10 years, you place a higher multiple on that than something that's more variable and more uncertain. So it makes some sense. But what we have observed in some other industries is where there is a similar kind of transformation or shift in earnings power from something that's more cyclical to something that's more reliable, businesses tend to earn higher valuation multiples, higher PE multiples. So two other examples across our holdings come to mind. One is a holding in our emerging markets fund called Hyundai Elevator. And it couldn't be more different, right? It's a Korean elevator business, right? Versus a video game console business. And in some sense, couldn't be any more different. But what's interesting about that one is, yes, they make and install elevators, and they're one of the leading producers of elevators and lifts in Korea. But what's interesting is when they sell an elevator, they tend to have a very long-term service contract associated with that elevator, right? To keep it in service, keep it safe, keep it operating well for a very long period of time, often a decade plus after installation. And that stream of revenue tends to be quite profitable, and it is very reliable because those services need to be done at sort of very well-known and understood and predictable intervals. So that stream of earnings that's associated with the business tends to earn a higher multiple. Another one that comes to mind, which is a holding in our global equity fund, is a business called Rolls-Royce, and they produce aircraft engines, often for very large planes. And it's a similar thing where, you know, the demand for aircraft can be quite cyclical. We all saw what happened in COVID when the entire industry shut down. But what makes Rolls-Royce an interesting business, and I think quite a valuable business from the stock market's point of view, is that it also has maintenance contracts for its engines over the long run. And so very similar to Hyundai Elevator, and maybe similar to something like a Nintendo Switch Online, what that produces at the end of the day is quite a predictable high margin stream of revenue, and the market tends to value that quite highly. Both those businesses remain somewhat cyclical and therefore have associated kind of macroeconomic risks as well as others. But there is a bit of an analogy there to Nintendo, even though they're operating completely different sectors.
Yeah, I think both of them really good examples, you know, really set the landscape. Do you think Nintendo or, you know, the gaming industry in general remain as a good diversifier of an investment portfolio?
So it's hard to say that a single stock necessarily is a great diversifier, but I think Nintendo is very idiosyncratic, right? You know, almost any business has some relationship with the macroeconomic environment it operates in. So you never want to be too confident in saying, you know, Nintendo's is fully in control of its own destiny, but it has a lot of levers within its own control that it can pull to be successful as a business. And therefore, I think is quite idiosyncratic. One of the things that's striking to me as someone who likes video games and plays them is I think that they're incredibly good value for money entertainment. Right? If you compare spending, let's say, roughly speaking, $100 Australian today on a new release from Nintendo, some of them are more, some of them are less. But roughly speaking, $100 Australian on a new release from Nintendo. These are often games that have dozens or hundreds of hours of entertainment value. Trust me, I see how my seven-year-old plays them. If you compare the kind of cost of that entertainment relative to the amount of entertainment it provides. I think it's incredible value compared to going to the movies, right, for example. And so there could be, let's say if there were to be a severe recession, there could be some trading down. You could see sales of new consoles slow down because those tend to be more expensive. But I think of video gaming as being very good value for money entertainment. So I think that does help insulate them a little bit from the macro, and it's a very idiosyncratic business. I think ideally, you know, we take great pride in being contrarians and putting together funds that are good diversifiers. So ideally we'd find sort of 50 different completely idiosyncratic opportunities like this. We can't always do that. We're not always lucky enough. But I do think this one is pretty far out there in terms of how its idiosyncrasies.
Awesome. Those are all the questions I have for you today, Eric. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.